Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to be looking at something a lot of you have been asking about, the genetics of tinnitus. We've got a ton of research papers, studies, expert opinions, all that good stuff to go through. And honestly, I think you might be kind of surprised by what we find.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Tinnitus research has really taken off in the past few years.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to think of it as like just a side effect of hearing loss, you know? But the more we learn about the genetics of it all, the more it seems like, well, a much more complicated picture.
Okay, so let's jump right into it. You sent over this paper by Professor Ali Dinesh from Florida Atlantic University, and it seems like a good place to start. He basically says that with, you know, over 20,000 genes in our DNA, there's no way that none of them are related to tinnitus.
Right, exactly. And actually, almost 3,000 of those genes are specifically related to, well, human communication in some way. So it makes you wonder, how many of them could be involved in tinnitus? Especially since it seems so tied to hearing loss a lot of the time.
That's true. I mean, we know of like 400 syndromes that are associated with hearing loss. And a lot of them, tinnitus is a pretty common symptom. So yeah, it makes sense there might be some overlap in the genes involved.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, you know, all these pieces are slowly starting to come together. But here's the thing. It gets even more complicated when you think about it. It's not just about the genes themselves. It's also about how they're expressed. Like things like epigenetics, you know, how our environment or the things we do can actually like switch genes on or off.
So it's not just about the blueprint, but also like the instructions for reading it. I once heard it described like DNA is like a cookbook, and then epigenetics is like choosing which recipe you're going to make based on what ingredients you have.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. Yeah. And when it comes to tinnitus, those ingredients could be, you know, anything, like being exposed to really loud noises all the time, your stress levels, even what you eat or how much you exercise.
Wow, that's so interesting. Okay, so we know genes are involved, but how do scientists actually figure out which genes are the ones causing the problem?
Well, twin studies are a really powerful tool. When you compare identical twins who have the exact same DNA to fraternal twins who share like 50% of their genes, it can help you see how much of a certain trait is because of genes versus, you know, environment.
Right, right. Like that Cedarouth study, I think it estimated that around 40% of the variation in tinnitus risk is down to genetic factors. That's a lot, right?
Yeah, it definitely showed that genes are a major part of this whole thing. And that's when researchers really started trying to track down the specific genes, you know, kind of like detectives looking for clues. One way to do that is to focus on what they call candidate genes, genes that we already know are involved in things related to hearing or tinnitus, like how our brains process sound or how nerve cells grow and communicate.
So genes that we already kind of suspect are involved in, like the inner workings of the ear and the brain?
Yeah, exactly. For example, two genes that have come up in research are GDNF and BDNF. They're both involved in the growth and survival of neurons. You know, those cells that transmit all the signals in our nervous system.
I feel like I've heard those gene names before. Don't they come up in research about other conditions too, like maybe Parkinson's disease?
You're right. They're popping up in studies about all sorts of neurological and psychiatric conditions, which to me just shows how connected all these systems are and how much we still have to figure out.
Okay, so we've got a few suspects, but I'm guessing it's not as easy as finding just one tinnitus gene, right?
No, not quite that simple. It's much more likely that there are lots of different genes, each one having a small effect, all working together to affect your risk of developing tinnitus, kind of like an orchestra. And on top of all that, there's the environment, which can either make those genetic predispositions stronger or weaker.
Like a combination of nature and nurture. So maybe someone has genes that make them more sensitive to loud noises. But if they always live in a really quiet place, they might never develop tinnitus.
Exactly. And there's actually been some fascinating research on how our surroundings can affect tinnitus risk. You sent over that study about how people who live in areas with more green spaces, like parks and trees, actually have lower chances of getting tinnitus.
Wait, really? Trees can protect you from tinnitus? How does that even work?
We don't know for sure yet. It's still being studied. But it seems like being around nature could have a calming effect on the brain, reducing stress, and maybe even counteracting some of the negative effects of being exposed to noise.
Wow, that's incredible. It just shows how complicated this whole thing is. And I guess that also means that tinnitus isn't just one thing, right? It's different for everyone. Different people probably get it for different reasons and experience it in different ways, too.
You're absolutely right. Tinnitus is what we call heterogeneous, meaning that there are probably many different subtypes of it, each with their own specific causes and mechanisms, which is why it's so hard to diagnose and treat effectively.
Yeah, it makes sense that a one-size-fits-all approach wouldn't really work. Speaking of treatment, I'm curious how all this research on genetics is actually going to help people who are dealing with tinnitus right now.
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's what everyone's working towards. One of the big hopes is that if we can understand exactly which genes are involved, we can come up with more targeted therapies. Imagine, you know, being able to analyze someone's DNA and predict if they're likely to develop tinnitus, or even figure out which treatments will work best for them.
That would be amazing. Like personalized medicine for tinnitus. So we might not have all the answers yet, but it seems like we're definitely headed in the right direction. We know genes play a big role, and we're starting to zero in on the specific genes and the environmental factors that are involved.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, we're really just getting started. There's so much more to discover, and I'm excited to talk about it all with you.
This is already blowing my mind. Let's
Okay.
Welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about how personalized treatment for tinnitus might actually become a reality because of all this research on genetics.
Yeah, totally. Nope. And another area where this genetic knowledge is really going to change things is in the search for biomarkers.
Okay, biomarkers. Remind me what those are again.
Think of them like clues. You know, measurable indicators of what's happening inside the body. It could be anything, really. Like specific molecules in your blood or even patterns of brain activity.
So if we could find biomarkers for tinnitus, it would be like we could actually see what's causing it and how it works.
Exactly. That's the hope. We could maybe even use biomarkers to diagnose different subtypes of tinnitus or predict who's at risk of developing it. We could even monitor how someone's responding to treatment.
That would be incredible. Imagine getting a blood test to see if you're predisposed to tinnitus or to see if a certain therapy is actually working.
That's the kind of precision medicine we're aiming for. You know, the serotonergic system, which we talked about a bit earlier, that's one area that's being investigated for potential biomarkers.
That's the system that regulates mood, right? The one antidepressants target.
Yep, that's the one. And it actually turns out it's also involved in how we process sound. So some researchers think it could be playing a role in tinnitus.
Okay, so how does this connect back to genetics?
Well, remember how we talked about SSRIs, those medications that affect the serotonergic system, and how they seem to help some people with tinnitus?
Yeah, but they don't work for everyone, which is really frustrating for people who don't get any relief.
Right, and that variability in response is actually a big clue. It suggests that there might be genetic differences in how our bodies process serotonin, you know, that key neurotransmitter in the system. Some people might naturally have higher or lower levels of serotonin, or their brains might respond differently to changes in those levels.
Mm-hmm.
And those variations could be, well, written into their DNA.
So our genes could actually be influencing how well those medications work.
Exactly. If we could figure out exactly which genes are involved, we might be able to predict who would actually benefit from SSRIs and who wouldn't. It's all about getting away from that one-size-fits-all approach and moving towards personalized treatments.
This is all making so much more sense now. It's like our genes are holding a treasure map, and every study is helping us decipher another piece of it.
Uh-huh. I like that. And speaking of studies, you were right to point out this research by Franson. It really digs deep into the connection between tinnitus, panic attacks, and this idea of epigenetics we were discussing.
Oh, right. This was the study that looked at DNA methylation, that process that can switch genes on and off depending on environmental factors.
Yep, exactly. They were looking specifically at the glucocorticoid receptor gene. It's also known as NR3C1. It's involved in our stress response.
Stress is definitely something that seems to be connected to tinnitus. People always say their symptoms get worse when they're stressed out.
It's a really common experience. And what Franson and his team found was that people who have chronic tinnitus and also experience panic attacks, they had higher levels of DNA methylation in this stress-related gene compared to people without tinnitus.
So basically, their experience of stress was actually leaving a mark on their DNA. And that mark was connected to their tinnitus. That's pretty crazy.
I know, right? It suggests that stress might not just be a trigger for tinnitus, but it could actually be contributing to like the underlying mechanisms of it, maybe through changes in how this gene is expressed.
Wow. Okay. So stress and epigenetics might be playing a bigger role than we thought. What about the bigger picture, though? Are there any big studies looking at the overall genetics of tinnitus?
There are. That's where genome-wide association studies, or GWAS, come in. These studies are basically like casting a giant net, you know, scanning the whole genome to see if there are any genetic variations that are more common in people with tinnitus than those without.
It's like a huge detective investigation, sifting through millions of pieces of evidence to find the culprit, or in this case, the genes that are causing the problem.
Exactly. And because of these GWAS studies, we've been able to identify some really promising leads. In fact, one of the most important studies in the field is one you sent over. It was published by Vona back in 2017, and it pointed out some significant pathways that seem to be linked to tinnitus.
Oh, wow. That's great. So now we're not just looking at individual genes, but whole pathways, these complex networks of molecules that control different functions in the body.
Yep. It's like zooming out and seeing the whole forest instead of just focusing on one tree.
And I bet these studies are getting even bigger and better as technology improves, right?
Absolutely. We're now using these huge databases called biobanks. They have genetic and health information from hundreds of thousands of people.
Whoa, that's a lot of data. What kind of things are we learning from these biobank studies?
Well, one thing they've been able to do is confirm some of the earlier findings about the link between hearing loss and tinnitus, really solidifying that connection. But they've also found other risk factors, like depression, for instance.
Which, you know, that makes sense. Tinnitus and mental health issues often seem to go together.
For sure. And this actually leads us to a really important study that I think you'll find interesting. It used data from the UK Biobank and had a huge sample size, over 38,000 people with tinnitus.
Wow, that's a lot of people. What did they find?
So this study, it was led by Sunil Kumar Bhatt, and they were able to identify a specific spot on our DNA. It's called a locus, and it's near a gene called GPM6A. And that spot showed a really strong association with tinnitus susceptibility.
Okay, this GPM6A gene, what do we know about it? What does it do?
It's a pretty cool gene, actually. It's involved in this process called glycosylation, which basically means it helps attach sugar molecules to proteins. And it turns out this is really important for how our inner ear functions, specifically the hair cells that detect sound vibrations.
So if there's something different about this GPM6A gene, it could mess up those delicate parts of the inner ear and make someone more likely to get tinnitus.
That's the idea. And this study also gave us even more evidence for the connection between tinnitus and mental health. They found strong relationships between gene sets that are involved in anxiety and stress, and how much distress people were having from their tinnitus.
It's like everything's starting to connect now. We're seeing how genes involved in hearing, stress, and mood regulation could all be contributing to this puzzle of tinnitus.
Right. It's like we're starting to see the whole forest now. But, you know, not all genetic studies look at these huge genome-wide analyses. Sometimes researchers zoom in and look at really specific variations within genes, like single nucleotide variants, or SNVs.
Okay, hold on a second. What are SNVs again?
Imagine your DNA like a long string of letters. Each letter represents a different building block. An SNV is just a change in one of those letters. It's a tiny little variation, but it can have a big impact on how a gene works.
So even one little typo in the genetic code can change the meaning of the whole message.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And this brings us to another study you found interesting, the one by Cedaroth in 2020. They were looking specifically at SNVs and how they might be involved in tinnitus. And the really interesting thing is that they found certain SNVs that were way more common in people with tinnitus compared to those without.
Did those SNVs account for a big portion of the risk for tinnitus?
Yeah, actually they did. They found that these SNVs explained about 6.3% of the variation in susceptibility to tinnitus. Well, that sounds like a ton, but considering how many different things might be involved in tinnitus, that's a pretty big chunk.
Wow, those little changes really do make a difference. What else did they learn?
Well, they actually found what they call a directional relationship between genes that are associated with hearing loss and tinnitus. Their findings basically suggested that some genes that are involved in hearing loss might actually also contribute to the development of tinnitus, and vice versa.
Wait, are you saying that the same genes that help us hear could also be responsible for these phantom sounds?
That's one way to think about it. It's definitely a crazy concept, and it just goes to show how interconnected all these systems are. But, you know, speaking of mind-blowing things, there's another gene that keeps coming up in research that you might find pretty interesting.
Okay, I'm all ears. Tell me about it.
It's called GDNF, and that we call a neurotrophic factor, which means it's involved in how neurons grow and survive. Remember those super important cells that carry signals all over our nervous system?
Yeah. So could changes